6 through 8. That's Ecclesiastes 12, 6 through 8. Or ever the silver cord be loosed, or the golden bowl be broken, or the pitcher be broken at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the cistern, then shall dust return to the earth as it was, and spirit shall return unto God who gave it. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher, all is vanity.
Good evening. It's always good to have this opportunity to preach in front of the congregation. I always end up learning so much whenever I have to prepare a lesson, because you really can't teach something unless you have a pretty good grasp of that concept yourself, and that can take a lot of time and effort. So I always look forward to the challenge of preaching, and this time it was particularly difficult because Gary was supposed to be out of town last month, so I had already prepared, and then he went and used my topic, so I had to change it this week. So this evening we're going to talk about my favorite book of the Bible, which happens to be Ecclesiastes. And this really flows well with what Evan spoke about this morning, because the writer of Ecclesiastes clearly understood how to prioritize the things in his life and how to look forward to the things in the next life. But before we get into our text this evening, I want to share a personal story with you. When I was in high school here at South Seminole, Brother Jeff was a teacher of our high school class. And Brother Jeff challenged me and a couple of the other young men to read our Bibles every day for 1 month. And he encouraged us to read the book of Proverbs. It just so happens that Proverbs has 31 chapters and the month had 31 days. So I ended up reading a chapter a day for that month. And after that month was over, I felt a little bit lost. I was like, okay, well, I just finished the book. Now what? It's kind of like when you're watching a show, you get to the end of it. You're like, well, that was a great show, but now what do I do? Well, I decided that I would keep reading. And so Ecclesiastes is the book after Proverbs, and I ended up reading that book. And now it's my favorite book of the Bible. Now, this has close to nothing to do with the lesson that we're going to have this evening. But I do want to say this. If you don't have someone in your life that challenges you to be better, if you don't have someone in your life that's constantly pushing you to achieve, someone that encourages you to be a better you, encourages you to be a better Christian, then find that person tonight. Because it's easy to challenge yourself and then give up. But when you have a person that challenges you, now you're being held accountable from that person, and now it's just that much harder to give up. So if you don't have someone in your life that pushes you to be a better you, someone that pushes you to be a better Christian, find that person this evening. Because if I didn't have people like that in my life, then I probably wouldn't have read Proverbs. I definitely wouldn't have read Ecclesiastes. I mean, that's a really long name that's hard to say. And we wouldn't be having the lesson that we're going to have this evening. So find those people. Most scholars attribute the book of Ecclesiastes to Solomon. And I don't think it takes a scholar to really see that, since the first verse of Ecclesiastes says, the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. It's thought that Solomon wrote this kind of autobiography later in his life, when he had become aware of the mistakes that he had made throughout his life. And I'm sure the older you get, the more you can understand that statement. The purpose of Ecclesiastes was to warn future generations against seeking after foolish, meaningless, materialistic emptiness. The first two chapters deal with Solomon's personal experiences in life. He describes all the material things that he acquired and all the different schemes that he enacted in his life to find this sense of lasting happiness. But he found out really the hard way that happiness doesn't come from the abundance of things that you own. He says in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, verses 10 and 11, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. Then I looked on all the works that my hands had done, and on the labor in which I had toiled. And indeed, all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. And this seems like a really bleak conclusion that Solomon comes to realize, but I'm sure if you ask the more seasoned, the more mature members of this church, they'll tell you the same thing, that money and material things really aren't the things that make you happy. In chapters 3 through 5, Solomon gives common explanations and observations that he has seen over the course of his life. And one of my favorite observations that he gives about life is in chapter 4, verses 9 through 12. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verses 9 through 12. Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for the labor. For if they fall, one will lift up his companion. But woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. Again, if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one be warm alone? Though one may be overpowered by another, two can withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. This is a simple and very practical observation that Solomon made. And he's just simply explaining that many things in life are easier when you have someone to help you through. So going back to the personal story that I told earlier, find someone that will encourage you to be a better you. Find those people that are going to push you to be a better Christian. Why? Because Solomon said, woe to him who is alone when he falls, for he has no one to help him up. Our Christian life is very difficult. It's not easy to do. And it's going to be even more difficult if we try to go through that life alone. So find a good Christian friend. Chapters 6 through 8 of Ecclesiastes is where the writer of this book gives more advice for living a meaningful life. The preacher gives quick one-liners in chapter 7, verses like, do not hasten in your spirit to be angry, for anger rests in the bosoms of fools. Also, he says, do not take to heart everything that people say. That's very simple. Or this verse that I'm still a little bit confused about, chapter 7, verse 3, the writer says, sorrow is better than laughter, for by a sad countenance the heart is made better. Solomon asked God for wisdom, and God gave Solomon wisdom. Now, I'm sure each and every one of us enjoys laughter and enjoys being happy far more than we enjoy being sad or being sorrowful. But I think it would be wise for us to consider the words that Solomon said, because he was a very wise man. Chapters 9 through 12 of Ecclesiastes, those are the summary chapters of the book, where the writer concludes that eventually everyone will die, and all the deeds of man are vanity or useless without God. In everything that we do, in all of our actions, everything that we say, our obedience must be to him. The conclusion of the book is made in a very blunt, very direct, concise way in chapter 12, Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verses 13 and 14. The writer says, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter, the matter here being life itself. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether good or evil. I think this is a good parallel to what Jesus said when he was asked, which is the greatest commandment of the law? In Matthew chapter 22 and verse 36, to which he responded, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. At first, you know, it can kind of sound like these two verses are opposed to each other. One saying fear God, the other one saying love God. First, we should love God. And when we love God, we're going to respect him. And when we love God, we're going to be reverent towards him. Whenever I think of these two passages together, I think of how a child grows up. You know, when you're a child and you do something wrong, you're terrified because you're fearful of your parents. You're fearful of them finding out. You're fearful that they're going to come and get you. And, you know, the consequences are there. But the older you get, that fear changes into something else, because you learn to appreciate your parents. You learn to, when you do something wrong, you're not fearful, but you're upset at yourself because you don't want to disappoint them, because you love them and you know that they love you too. And it's the same way with our Christian life. We must love God and follow him, because he deserves nothing but our utmost respect, and because he loved us and he's done so much for us. At the same time, We must fear God, because ultimately he's the one that controls everything. He's the one that's going to determine where we spend our lives eternally. The writer of Ecclesiastes understood that fact, the fact that Evan spoke about this morning, which is why he wrote, "Vanity of vanity, all is vanity." See, because without God, our life is meaningless. Although the preacher in Ecclesiastes says that all life is vanity, he also understood and wanted to make clear that there is a time for everything. And timing is everything. You've probably heard that phrase many times. I know I have. And there's a great deal of truth to that statement. The difference between a good joke and a bad joke really comes down to timing. If you're terrible with timing, you can't tell a joke, because an inappropriate pause in a joke just absolutely kills it, and then you're lame, and that's bad. Timing is essential when you're dealing with people. You don't ask for a raise at your job if business is tanking, no one's come in for a while, the workplace is really stressful. That's not the time you do that. You don't try to correct someone that is threatened by you. You don't ask someone for a favor if that person is stressed out at the time or they're really angry. We understand that. Timing is very important. In cooking, timing is important. That juicy hamburger that you put on the grill is made of raw meat. And if you don't cook it long enough, then it's going to be pretty nasty. And you might end up with a tapeworm in your stomach, and that would just be really bad. But the point is, timing is everything. And we understand that. In Ecclesiastes chapter 3, Solomon tells us that there is an appropriate time for everything. The unpleasant as well as the pleasant experiences. Ecclesiastes chapter 3 is going to be our main text this evening. So let's go ahead and read verses 1 through 8 of Ecclesiastes chapter 3. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to pluck what is planted. A time to kill, and a time to heal. A time to break down, and a time to build up. A time to weep, and a time to laugh. A time to mourn, and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones, and a time to gather stones. A time to embrace, and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to gain, a time to lose. A time to keep, and a time to throw away. A time to tear, and a time to sow. A time to keep silence, and a time to speak. A time to love, a time to hate, a time of war, and a time of peace. When I first read this, I don't know why this popped up in my head, but clearly Solomon never struggled in English class, because the first verse of chapter 3 is a perfect example of a thesis statement. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. One thing that is abundantly clear from these 8 verses is this. Expect change. Expect change. The evidence of change is all around us. We see it every day. Spring becomes summer, and summer becomes fall, and so on. You know how the seasons work. We're born. We grow old. The new becomes old. We pass on, and then the new are born to replace us. Your body ages. You get older. You become weaker. Your computer always runs slower and slower for some reason you can't figure out. But none of these things are surprising, because we understand that the world is constantly changing. Although this world is constantly changing and is continually winding down, there is one that will not change. There's one that won't cease. See, because God was alive yesterday, and God is alive today, and God's going to be alive for tomorrow and tomorrow's tomorrow and all the days after that. If we love him, if we trust him, if we fear him, then we'll be able to handle all the times that Solomon is writing about in Ecclesiastes chapter 3. We won't have anything to worry about. We'll be able to make it through those times. The word time is used 29 times in verses 1 through verses 8. Before looking at these times, it's important to note that Solomon was not making any judgments on the topics that he was talking about in these 7 verses. He's simply just making statements. He's simply recording the events that occur under heaven. Solomon was always trying to impart wisdom to his listener. And I think the first piece of wisdom that he was trying to impart to the listener of this poem that he wrote here is this. A part of success is understanding that life is complex and understanding that life is made up of so many different parts. Once you understand that life is made up of many different parts, you can begin to prepare for all those different times. And then when those times come, you'll be able to act appropriately in those situations. Having a firm grip on all the times that Solomon describes in this poem will really make you a well-rounded person, makes you a very level-headed individual. And, I mean, that's a really good thing. I'm sure that we all want to be well-rounded people and very level-headed. After stating his wonderful thesis, Solomon launches into his 7-verse poem, where he makes 28 statements. He makes 14 positive statements and 14 negative statements. The first pair is in verse 2. A time to be born, a time to die. A time to plant, and a time to pluck what has been planted. And this first statement should really be really obvious to everybody in the room. We were all born. We're all born, right? And one day, we're going to pass from this life. A baby is born every 3 seconds on this planet, while someone departs this world every 8. Some people describe life as a revolving door, and it's very, we can understand that. I think that's a very true assessment on how life really is. We have no control over the day that we're born. We have no control over the day that we die. We have no control over who we're born to, our gender, or the way we look, or where we're born. But God knows. God knows when we're going to be born, and God knows when we're going to die. And like we spoke about this morning, it's up to us to figure out what we're going to do in the middle. That the rope is hanging up in the hallway, and that little blue piece is our life. And we know there's a beginning. We know there's an end. It's up to us to determine what we're going to do in that part in the middle, looking ahead to the rest of eternity. And our scripture reading this evening really puts that fact in perspective. Again, Ecclesiastes chapter 12, verse 6 and 7. Ecclesiastes 12, 6 and 7. We'll start, verse 6. Remember your creator before the silver cord is loosed, or the golden bowl is broken, or the pitcher shattered at the fountain, or the wheel broken at the well. Then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. James puts this thought in his own words in James chapter 4, verse 13 and 14. James chapter 4, verses 13 and 14. James says, "Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow, we will go to such and such a city and spend a year here and buy and sell and make a profit. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away." Our time here on this earth is quick, and we need to make sure that we use this time wisely for God. The next pair that we want to look at is in verse 3. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. All right, before you panic, yes, there actually is a time to kill. I'm pretty sure that Solomon understood the commandments, and he understood that the 6th commandment said, "Thou shalt not kill," but that's not exactly what this verse is talking about. So we can read the Bible and we can learn that Samson killed 1,000 men with the jawbone of a donkey. We just learned the other week that Elijah had 450 prophets of Baal killed. Joshua had Achan, his sons, his daughters, his oxen, his donkeys, his sheep, and his tent stoned and burned. That's pretty crazy. But at the same time, God was disturbed when Cain killed Abel. He said that his blood was screaming out to him. See, there is a time to kill, but it must be a time that God has chosen to kill. Not when we kill for our own selfish ambitions or our own selfish reasons. Fortunately, there's also a time to heal. While Jesus was on this earth, we can read through the New Testament and we can read about all the different miracles he did and all the different people that he healed. He caused the lame to walk again. He caused the blind to see again. He had a friend named Lazarus and he died and he came and revived him from the grave. But the time of healing didn't end when Jesus died. Rather, his death allows us to be healed from our sins daily. Let's read 1 John chapter 1, verse 7. 1 John chapter 1, verse 7 says, "But if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship with one another, and the blood of Jesus Christ, his Son, cleanses us from all sins." We are healed by Jesus' blood. And that's when the time to break down and the time to build up comes into play. Before our baptism, we were called the old man. And that old man was covered with sin. But after we got out of that water, all of that sin was washed away. We need to make sure that we're allowing our sins and we're allowing that old life to be torn down. We're allowing that old life to be broken away so that God can build us up in a way that he wants us to be. It should be our prayer each and every day that God will build us up to be a good soldier, to be a good child to him. There's a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance. These two pairs express some of the strongest human emotions. Both sorrow and joy are huge parts of life. But without one, the other is really unrecognizable. You don't know sorrow unless you've had joy. You don't know joy unless you've been sorrowful before. And I think that King David is the perfect example of these two parallels. In 2 Samuel chapter 12, verses 15 through 17, we can read how David reacted to the punishment that God had laid out for him for the sin of adultery with Bathsheba and having her husband murdered. David wept on the ground and wouldn't eat for 7 days. I can't imagine not eating for 7 days, hoping that God would spare the life of his son. However, we know the story. We just learned it. His son didn't make it. His son still passed away. But once that boy died, David realized that the time of mourning and weeping was over. He got up, he washed himself, and he ate. And the people around David were confused. They're really thrown off by that. They were like, "David, well, that doesn't make any sense." See, during tumultuous times, it's important for us to both grieve and to rejoice. We grieve for the loss, but we rejoice in the continued blessings and the continued mercy that God always pours out on us. God intends human beings to grieve, and he understands that. The shortest verse in the Bible is Jesus wept, and that tells us that Jesus cried after hearing about the news of the death of his friend Lazarus. Jesus also wept in a garden before he was betrayed. But in contrast to that, David danced before the Lord with all of his might. And that's described in 2 Samuel chapter 6, verses 14 and 15. We must learn to take the good with the bad because we know that God is in control. And if we truly know that, we'll be able to get through anything. Romans 8 and verse 28 says, "And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose." As long as we are living according to his purpose and for his purpose, we can live through those times of joy and mourning at the same time. And we can live through those times of dancing because we know that all things will work together in God's time. The next pairing is really the weirdest one to me. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. Even, I looked this one up, even biblical scholars can't really agree with what the time of casting or gathering stones is referring to. It can't really mean a time to build and a time to demolish what you built because we already talked about that. That's back in verse 3. Some people thought perhaps it meant to cast stones in a garden or in a field and then pick up those stones afterwards. I'm really not sure. And the fact that I was unsure about this verse made me think of this. There's a time to know, and there's a time to not know. And the fact of the matter is that there's going to be things that we know for sure, and there's going to be things that we don't really know. There's going to be things that we're confused about or that are difficult for us to understand. But that's okay, because we serve a God who knows everything. Again, God knows. 1 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 25. 1 Corinthians 1 verse 25 tells us that the foolishness of God is wiser than men, and the weakness of God is stronger than men. See, the omnipotence of God is an idea that we should strive to embrace. We should embrace his laws. We should embrace his holiness. We should embrace our servitude to him, to Christ. And when life starts to get in the way of our embrace with God, that's when we need to stop. That's when we need to reflect, and we need to think about what's more important. When things start to get in the way of our embrace that we have with God, that's the time to refrain from embracing. Stop embracing those things in your life that are dragging you down. Stop embracing those things that are taking you away from church, taking you away from the good influences in your life. Sometimes we need to let go and let God. Verses 5, 6, and 7 of Ecclesiastes chapter 3, they all really go together. Verse 6 says that there's a time to gain and a time to lose, a time to keep and a time to throw away. So here's our biblical authority against being a hoarder and for having garage sales. But also, this verse is a little bit deeper than that. Let's look at a passage that we spoke about this morning, Matthew chapter 10, verses 34 through 39. Matthew chapter 10, verses 34 through 39. And this is Jesus speaking. Do not think that I came to bring peace on earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set man against his father, a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's enemy will be those in his own household. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He who finds his life will lose it, and he who loses his life for my sake will find it. If Jesus was up here and he was telling us this the same thing today, he might word it like this. He might say, he who does not take up his electric chair and follow after me is not worthy of me. Or he who does not take up his guillotine and follow after me, it's not worthy of me. See, we understand those concepts. This is what he was saying to the people. He said, take up your cross, that instrument that's used to kill criminals, and follow me. The people understood what Jesus was telling them. He was telling them that they would have to lose their lives in order to gain life with him. There's a time to lose, and there's a time to gain. And the question that we have to ask ourselves is, are we willing to lose our lives, to lose who we are, to gain a life filled with Christ? There's a number of things that we're told to keep. And most importantly, we're told that we are to keep our faith. We need to throw away those sins and throw away those idols that we have in our life and cast our cares upon Jesus. There's a time to tear, a time to sow, a time to keep silence, and a time to speak. In the Old Testament, when people mourn the death of someone that was really close to them, we read it all the time that they would tear their clothes apart. And I remember being little, that always just baffled me because I could never tear my clothes apart, so I always figured they're really strong men. But when they were in mourning, that's what they would do. They would tear their clothes. But when the time of mourning was over, for some of the people in that culture, it was customary for them to fix the tears that they made. It was time for them to sew their clothes back together. And once that tear was fixed, the time of mourning and the time for their silence was over. And I think that this concept really pairs up well with what Solomon says next, that there's a time to keep silence and a time to speak. There's an appropriate time to talk, and there's an inappropriate time to talk. And I'm sure we've all messed up on that many times. I know I have. I love what Proverbs chapter 17 and verse 28 says. Proverbs 17, verse 28. The writer says, even a fool is counted wise when he holds his peace. When he shuts his lips, he is considered perceptive. On the other hand, let's consider what Proverbs chapter 25, verses 11 and 12 says. Proverbs 25, 11 and 12 says, a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver, like an earring of gold and an ornament of fine gold, a wise rebuker to an obedient ear. Whereas my mother would always told me, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. We understand that. And if we truly understand this, we know that there is a time that we need to speak up. There's a time that, the older members are going to tell us wise words. And us younger members, it's up to us to make sure that that's the time that we're being silent and we're listening to those who are older than us. We all have different stories. We all have things that we can share with each other. So having a firm grip on the time to be silent and the time to speak is very important. A time to love, a time to hate, a time of war, and a time of peace. This is the final pairing in Ecclesiastes chapter 3. And at first glance, this verse can be kind of hard to understand. We definitely understand the love part. I mean, very easily. There's an entire chapter in Corinthians just devoted to love. And a couple weeks ago, Gary did a sermon on it. Jesus said, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." That's John chapter 13, verses 34-35. But Solomon also says that there's a time to hate. And that's kind of confusing. As Christians, we are never, never to hate the person. And we can read that from 1 John chapter 2, verses 9 and 11. I encourage you to read that a little bit later. But I would like to look at Revelation chapter 2, verses 4 through 6. Revelation chapter 2, verses 4 through 6. This is Jesus, he's speaking to the church at Ephesus. "Nevertheless, I have this against you, that you have left your first love. Remember, therefore, from where you have fallen, repent, and do the first works, or else I will come to you quickly and remove your lampstand from its place, unless you repent. But this you do have, that you hate the deeds of the Nicolaitans, which I also hate." The Christians at the church of Ephesus hated the works of the Nicolaitans, just as God did. And we need to learn how to hate what is evil and not the people who are doing the evil. We may hate the act of abortion, but we need to have compassion for those who have gone through it, and it's up to us to be able to reach out to them, show our love, and to speak to those individuals. We may hate the negative effects of alcoholism. We may hate that drunken drivers crash into people and people die. We hate that fact. We hate that sin. But at the same time, we need to love those who are struggling with addiction. We need to love those who are struggling with alcoholism and do our best, do whatever it takes to help them to escape that. We're at war right now. Jonathan told us on Wednesday that if you don't want to be a Christian that backslides all the time, we need to put on the Christian armor that Paul talks about in Ephesians chapter 6. Why would we need armor if we're not at war? That doesn't make any sense. We understand that. We're at war. Internally, our spirit is at war against our own flesh. Let's look at Galatians chapter 5 and verse 17. Galatians chapter 5 and verse 17 says, "For the flesh lusts against the spirit, and the spirit against the flesh. And these are contrary to each other, to another, so that you do not do the things that you wish." Externally, we're at war against the false teachers, and we need to be ready to give a defense of the hope that we have inside of us. We can read that from 1 Peter chapter 3 and verse 15. Fortunately, this time of war, it won't last, and there's going to be a day where all wars will cease. There will be a time when dying, killing, weeping, mourning, losing, and tearing, and hating, it's going to be a time where all that is obsolete. There's going to come a day when the time of peace will be here. And that time is going to be eternal. Like the song that we sung at the close of this morning's worship service, "This world is not our home." Yet Solomon had the right thesis statement when he said that there is a time for every purpose under heaven. But we aren't going to be under heaven forever. There's a day coming when we have an opportunity to be in heaven. We need to be looking towards heaven, like Evan talked about this morning. We need to be working towards heaven. We need to be living our lives worthy to be there. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, all is vanity. When we try to make it through this life, and we try to make it through all the times that we just looked at without God, our life truly is in vain. When we're trying to do things without him, but when we do have him a part of our life, that's what we need to do. Let's make sure that we're living our lives with purpose and with meaning. If you've been struggling through these times that we've talked about tonight, remember that this world is not your home. This world isn't my home. Your time of peace is coming. If you continue to walk in the light as Jesus is in the light, then we'll be able to take part of that time of peace. We'll be able to be in heaven with him, and we won't have to worry about all these times anymore. If anyone has any need that needs to be brought before the church this evening, we invite you to come forward. And also, if you know what you need to do to be saved, although we didn't talk about it this evening, if you know what you need to do and you want to be baptized this evening, we invite you to come forward as we stand and sing.